Hey, welcome back into First Draft, just 7 weeks away from the 2024 NFL Draft, at least day one of it. I'm Field Yates, and of course, he is Mel Kiper Jr., under 50 days away. Mel, what an exciting time for all those of us that love the NFL Draft.
It really is. It's amazing. Well, you said 7 weeks, Field. It does sneak up on you. These weeks fly by, and before you know it, we're going to be pro days. You're going to be moving along, traveling all over the country with pro days, Field, and then we have mocks coming out. We start to get a little after free agency. We settle into needs a little better, because what does free agency do? It eliminates needs, and it creates needs, right? Yeah. So what we think a team may need right now will change in another 2 weeks. So we got an exciting weekend, because we'll start getting a little idea this weekend about what free agents may be moving, where they're going. Next week, the new league year starts right on the 13th, Wednesday. So once that ball starts rolling downhill, it never stops, Field.
Yeah, just a couple of notes there. You did mention some pro days. I will be in Oregon Monday and Tuesday, Mel. Eugene, Oregon, my first time there, never been. So if anybody who's listening right now has suggestions of places to see, eat, etc. I don't know how much disposable time I have, but as a newbie, I'm certainly open to any recommendations you might have. Check out, of course, Bo Nix being the headlining player as far as the pro day is concerned, but if Troy Franklin, Jackson Powers Jr., Brandon Dorlus, Evan Williams, they've got probably five, six, seven guys who might end up being draft picks. Bucky Irving as well, of course, the electric running back who had a terrific season for them this past year. And I also have a mini mock draft coming out on Wednesday night or Thursday morning, Mel, to react to what you're talking about. When I say mini mock draft, not the full 32 picks, but it'll be at least 10 and maybe 15 picks that will be reacting to the first wave of free agency. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but as an example, if Kirk Cousins signs with the Falcons, all right, we can scratch them off as a quarterback needy team. And all of a sudden, the Minnesota Vikings become a very quarterback needy team themselves. But what we're going to do today is dive into some quarterback questions, Mel. It's been a little bit of time since we dove into those guys. And then my top 50, my first edition, came out yesterday on ESPN.com. So we're going to bang around some thoughts that you have in reaction to my top 50. And then just talk about some players that are interesting to us, because the beauty of the draft, Mel, as you have told me 5 million times now, it does not end on day one. So lots of guys that have plenty of talent that can help impact winning. But let's get to the quarterbacks here, Mel. And we are now off the combine. We've got basically just pro days, pre-draft visits, and some private workouts left before the draft takes place itself. But I don't think there's going to be a ton of movement amongst, you know, quarterbacks at the very top. Do you believe that Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, and I probably should have said Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, have separated themselves from the pack? Or do you feel as though, Mel, the top three quarterbacks are still going to be beauty in the eye of the beholder?
I think it's separated a little bit, Field, but there's so much mixed opinion on quarterbacks. And I think Caleb is the consensus number one guy. We know that. Looks like Chicago, they trade Justin Fields, move forward with Caleb. You got the ninth pick, see what you get for Justin Fields. We're going to see where Justin lands. Interesting thing for me is going to be Denver to see what they do with Sean Payton. But I think Caleb won. Let's eliminate any discussion about Jaden maybe overtaking Caleb. I don't think that's happening. Jaden settles in two. Drake May, J.J. McCarthy is a battle. I think that's legitimate. I'm talking this morning to people before the show, and all I hear is J.J. McCarthy.
Wow.
J.J. McCarthy is so smart, so tough, athletic. He almost, because of what he was protected in doing, because they didn't let him carry the offense, has benefited from that, because it adds some mystery to it. He's kind of old school quarterback, you know, didn't throw it 40, 50 times. It wasn't on him just throwing all these bubble screens and all over the place. Bottom line is J.J. McCarthy could overtake Drake May. Could possibly. Yeah. It looks like, Field, I am 12 to Denver. People look say, he's going to top 10. Somebody maybe Jim Harbaugh trades off of 5. You guys were talking about a trade, Field, I know, with the Chargers, right? And others were talking about a trade, Jordan Reed. Maybe they do. Maybe Jim allows somebody to jump up and get his quarterback and says, here he is. I don't know what's going to happen there, but I always say, Field, I just did my ratings last night. It's going to be up tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. Love it.
J.J. McCarthy, and you can talk about where you have him. I'm going to have him around 1920. I haven't finalized that. It's going to be up tomorrow. 1920. That's as high as I can see him going for me. Okay. Yep. That protects you against that overdrafting of Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, EJ Manuel, Blake Bortles. Okay. Remember Zach Wilson got hot. Everybody loves Zach Wilson. Baker Mayfield overtook Josh Allen. I didn't see that coming. You got to trust your ratings, Field. And that's what I'm going to do with Jay. I like JJ. I love them to be top five, top 10? I can't say it. And that ratings will protect you against, you warned me a weeks ago, you thought over drafting. And I go back in the history of these draft picks and say, and see some of those names that are, would be protected if you just stick to your board and don't let it, don't let all that momentum grab you and force you to put it, put a guy up way too high.
Yeah, and I've thought about, and just to reply to that point, Mel, and then to go back to the quarterbacks for a second. I thought about players that I think were not inflated in terms of their value. Like, they ended up going where they should have gone based off of the board going into the draft at the quarterback spot, that ended up being really good success stories. Andy Dalton ends up going top of the second round, where he should have, right? Became a really good player for a long time. They won a lot of games in Cincinnati. Derek Carr, still playing right now, of course, with the Saints. Top of the second round at Fresno State. Still playing, still a successful football player. Oh, hold on, actually. Saints fans are going to be mad about that. A guy who's had a lot of success in the league. We can debate just how successful they will be this upcoming season. But Derek Carr has played a lot of good football. Colin Kaepernick, another guy that goes to the top of the second round, ends up having, although a short period, a shorter career because of circumstances. Bowl, yeah. He was on the doorstep of winning the Super Bowl, was one of the most electric players in the NFL for a period of time. So the risk that I see in inflating the value of the quarterbacks. Yeah, Will Levis, and you know, certainly the sample size is smaller there, but like some of the returns are promising. The most notable moment being that comeback win against the Dolphins on Monday Night Football late last season, Mel. So JJ McCarthy's at 28th on my board, Mel. And okay. The balance of the top 25 and the top 50 is this. Some of how you're grading these players is how you see them. Some of how you grade these players is how you believe the league will draft them. So I've got a database that it's not on ESPN.com. It's a personal database that I keep that is not just my rankings of the players overall, but also my estimate for them, right? And so there are guys that I concede will go higher or lower than where I have them ranked. So in my round estimate tab for JJ, I have him at 28th on my big board, and I have him as a top 12 projected pick. So sometimes those things are incongruent, right? And I admit that. So it's hard for me, though, on the top 50 to move them up a whole lot further when there are players, albeit at less important positions, that I have more conviction on. You know, I just feel better about a lot of these corners. I feel better about a lot of these offensive tackles. Certainly feel better about a lot of these wide receivers that I get it. JJ is going to go higher than many, if not most of the players that I'm thinking of right now. But for me, it's hard to move them up my board any further. That's just where I stand on it.
That's a great point. I think you can't let mock drafts and what you're hearing about where a kid may go impact how you think about the player from a rating standpoint. It's hard to do, Phil, because if you like a guy, I can see bumping them a little bit. If you really like a guy, move him up a little bit because you kind of go back to tape and sometimes you're kind of talked into things if you like a player. But if you have questions and your ratings board has him at 28, I got him at 19, 20, we're not taking him in the top 10. You can't do that. You just can't. Mm-hmm. So let somebody else take him. It's not like we hate him, but we're not going to take him that high. Would we take him if he slid down? Yeah, but this ratings always protects you against the fatal mistake of overdrafting a player. And I've always heard those stories, Phil, and you know it. The scouts will leave. Everybody will leave for the night. You come in draft day morning and the board changed.
Yeah, of course.
Miraculously, right? Somebody came in and changed the ratings overnight to make it so we can take a guy. Usually it's the guy in charge. So I can now take that guy because I moved him up from 18 to 8 to 8, 9, 10, or from 50 to up to 23 or whatever it may be. Crazy things happen the night before the draft. So you have to worry. And I've had some great personnel people say, your ratings protect you from that. Stick to your ratings. Don't be overwhelmed by the momentum or all the talk about a player and let that affect how you feel. Because you can always go back to games, field. And talk to yourself and say, oh, I found a game. I like them a lot more. You can always find that game. Or somebody in the league will say, take a look at this game or that game.
Yeah.
And if you do, you'll like them a lot more. If you do, you'll say, okay. And then you trust your people in the league. They know everything, right? They got all the information. And you do. So whenever I've done that, it's kind of been a mistake over the last 46 years. So I'm trying this year, Phil, and when I instructed you when you started, I said, Phil, trust your lies. The eye in the sky never lies. It's the old cliche, right?
Sure.
Trust your ratings board. And don't worry about what I think, Jordan Reed thinks, Matt Miller thinks, somebody in the league thinks. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just do what you think and debate it and have fun with it and fight it out till the bitter end. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, well said, Mel. And the last thing that I would say about JJ is, you know, the sample size is so much smaller, right? So when you're talking about, you can find games in which he looks brilliant. And by the way, he did have some really, really clutch moments for Michigan down the stretch this past season. They won the national championship. They played two excellent teams in the playoffs, one in Alabama that has an outstanding defense, Washington's defense, not the same level, but they're going to have probably, I would say, at least two guys drafted from this past year's squad, maybe three. You know, they're going to have some defensive guys that you end up seeing on Sundays, you know, this fall or in the future. So it's not like JJ's tape is terrible, Mel. It's just that when you have this massive sample size where you feel really convicted upon Jaden Daniels, because from start to finish this season, there was really not that many bad games or bad moments at all. I mean, Florida State at the beginning of the season might have been the worst, Mel, and it wasn't that terrible relative to other games for the top quarterback. So with JJ, it's just a different sample size. I like him a lot. I think he'll end up going higher than my 28th overall rating. And maybe I need to adjust that a little bit as we get closer and closer to the draft, because other players have reasons to move down. But I think I have clarity on the quarterbacks right now, Mel. I'm not saying that I know exactly where they will go or agree with exactly where they will go, but I feel like, at least in the case of the top three, and I think in the top six as well, Mel, I know the strengths, I know the limitations. So to go back to Caleb and Jaden Daniels and Drake May right now, I've got all three in my top five. And I don't know if I'm going to waver off of that. I feel really good about those three quarterbacks having the chance to be a 10-year starter in the NFL. With Caleb Williams, got to play on, you know, better within structure, got to play on time more, 16 fumbles during his college career, got to clean that up. Jaden Daniels, unbelievable this past season, but his weight is what it is, 204 pounds, right? We'll see whether he has a big hand or not. We don't know that. And if you're the Patriots drafting him at pick three this year, and you play in a monsoon, it feels like once or twice a year. You got to factor that into the equation as well. Drake May, this past season, inconsistent, up and down. Footwork is a question mark in some people's eyes. You know what, Mel? Oh, that's fine. Like, you got to debate, you got to figure out what is coachable and what is not coachable. And as you tell me all the time, it's not Harbaugh, it's Coach Harbaugh, right? It's not, you know, it's not McDaniel, it's Coach McDaniel. So if those traits can't be coached up, then maybe that's enough to dissuade you. But I feel really good about the three being where they belong. And if those guys, if for some reason Drake May is not the third quarterback taken in the board, Mel, that's fine. I'm not saying it has to go a certain way, but I would not agree with that. I do still believe that there is a lot of good to work with Drake May. I feel like right now he's kind of being brushed aside far too often relative to how I think I view him as a player.
Yeah, don't worry about how to come off the board. That's the other thing. We always feel on draft day, you come back after 3 days and complete and say, well, my guy went undrafted. My guy went in the fifth round. My guy went later than I thought. Who cares? Yeah. At the end of the day, nobody cares once they start playing. Josh Allen was the third quarterback taken. I thought he'd go number one. Two other quarterbacks went ahead of him. He went third. It's happened over the course of history where it doesn't come off the board perfectly. So you can't really worry about where they come off and where your guy goes in relationship to the other players who get overdrafted. Trey Lance got overdrafted. We said it. We didn't know a lot about Trey Lance, right? One game against Central Arkansas, he beat him with his legs, not his arm, but he had that real good year and he had the talent. Yeah. So we were kind of talked into, okay, well, he's going to go. He went third, but he was overdrafted and it was higher than a lot of people thought, even going into that draft when we didn't know who the 49ers were going to take. And we said, okay, it was going to be Mac Jones, Trey Lance. Look at that draft field and look at all those quarterbacks that have not lived up to it. Now, when we get to the Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, you're going to be at Bo Nix's pro day.
Yeah.
That to me is going to be fun to see two quarterbacks that battled it out for a championship. Twice this year, they played a lot of games against each other. These two quarter, both transfers who really benefited from leaving Indiana and leaving Auburn. Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., who ends up going higher? How do you rate them right now, Field?
So here's how I have it right now. I have Michael Penix Jr. as the fifth quarterback. I have him as player 39 on my overall big board. So that would be a player that probably goes somewhere in the second round. Meanwhile, as it pertains to Bo Nix, I have him as 42nd. So we're only three spots apart on the big board here, Mel. There are traits within these two that I think are clearly different. Like, Michael Penix Jr.'s arm is far superior to Bo Nix. His arm strength is terrific. I mean, his arm, I know the term arm talent drives a lot of people crazy. And sometimes it drives me. I know it does you on occasion. But the angles he's able to throw from, the torque he's able to put into his arm, the fastball that he can throw, some of the deep vertical shots this past year were absolutely perfect. Michael Penix Jr., the ball just flies off of his hand. That's not the case with Bo Nix, right? He's got a good arm. He doesn't have that dominant arm strength that Michael Penix Jr. brings to the table. Moreover, though, Bo Nix is a better athlete. I don't think that part is to be debated at all. He was a razzle-dazzle quarterback during his Auburn days, right? But he has kind of been trained to not play so sort of like loose and free. He was much more structured during his time at Oregon. So ultimately, I ended up deferring to the arm talent of Michael Penix Jr., because if you're going in the second round, maybe you land with a team. I'm just making this up here. The Rams, who might be looking towards the future, who have a good solid infrastructure around them at the quarterback position. I haven't really thought about Michael Penix Jr. and the Rams. I'm just thinking of a team that's not, you know, in desperate need of a lot of pieces around him, where it's going to have protection and good weapons to work with. But I acknowledge, Mel, that Bo Nix might well go ahead of Michael Penix Jr. because of the medicals. Michael Penix Jr. has the same ACL torn twice, plus two shoulder injuries that ended his season. And while I know that he hasn't been hurt over the past 2 years, Mel, some teams are going to view that ACL is a potentially more significant risk than others will. And I'm not a doctor, so I kept him at quarterback 5. Do you have it the same, or do you have it flipped?
I still have Michael Penix Jr. ahead of Bo Nix. I think when you look at Michael Penix Jr., if he goes to a team with an offensive line that can protect them field and allow him to be able to set, plant, throw, and he can. He can throw the ball to any point on the field. Bo Nix, you know, the 2 years, you can't dispel what he did. He was phenomenal for 2 years at Oregon. No question about it. He doesn't have the wow arm. Both those kids I have second round grades on. Will one of them go in the first round? Maybe. There was all that debate about Pittsburgh. I kind of look at Bo Nix as a Kenny Pickett type quarterback. So I don't think you get necessarily better there. We talked about that. We debated that whole thing with the Steelers. That's the kind of quarterback Bo Nix may be. Is Bo Nix always going to be that guy? This is the thing you have to think about, Field.
Yep.
Will Bo always be that guy that in the division is the bottom echelon quarterback, or can he elevate to a Kirk Cousins level? And I say Kirk, because Kirk's always been a good quarterback. Has he been great? No, but he's been good. So I think, can you be, I get into that. We said that with Kenny Pickett. Can Kenny Pickett be Kirk Cousins? Where Bo Nix is going to be viewed. Can he get to that level where he's not you cannot have in a division the worst quarterback in the division. You just can't. So you got to try to swing for the fences a bit. Who swings for the fences more throwing the ball? It's Michael Penix Jr., but you better have an offensive line that can protect them. Not only the injuries, but off platform, moving around, that's not his forte. And like I say, it's going to be the key for him is going to the right team with the right protection.
I'm not going to do what we did for a large chunk of the regular season and then all the way to the Super Bowl as well, where people debated how much of the work Brock Purdy was doing versus how much of it was the system he was playing in. I'm just going to note that NFL evaluators are keeping track of the types of throws that quarterbacks are making as well. There are a lot of stats to love about Bo Nix from this past season. The single season FBS completion percentage mark over 77% is very impressive, Mel. But of the top six quarterbacks, which we've discussed those six right now, Bo Nix had an average of 6.25 air yards per attempt. So not a lot of vertical shots. All five of the other five were up over 9 air yards per attempt, right? So I'm not saying that I can make the throws that Bo Nix is making. I'm just saying that there were elements of the Oregon offense that were more user-friendly for the quarterback, which is also part of the evaluation. I think we're both big fans of Bo Nix. I think we both believe that in the right circumstances, he could become a starting level NFL quarterback. I just think that I see a drop-off from quarterback 3 to quarterback 4, and then I see a subsequent drop-off from quarterback 4 to quarterbacks 5 and 6, with JJ being that quarterback 4 kind of in between.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Before we wrap up quarterbacks, anybody who's going later than the six guys that we have discussed that you think to yourself, Just keep an eye on him. Just keep an eye on what this guy can become.
Always look at the Rattler. Okay.
There we go. Yep.
And I think maybe he's got a chance. You know, certainly, Michael Pratt's intriguing because Michael Pratt doesn't wow you in any real area, except he won games at Tulane. He made throws when he had to. He used his legs when he had to. To me, I think Michael Pratt's got a lot of that late round guy that people are going to say, good college quarterback, but some limitations there. Michael Pratt, late in the draft, I wouldn't have a problem. I'm not saying he's going to be like those guys that went down. I'm going to break the names. We know who the late round guys are that hit, like a Mr. Irrelevant. But Michael Pratt's kind of in that mold field. He's played a lot of football. He's won. He doesn't have any of the wow traits, but as a late round quarterback, I wouldn't have a problem in the fifth, sixth, seventh round bringing Michael Pratt into the fold.
Yeah, and by the way, it's a shallow quarterback class, man. It really is. Yeah, like, I'm just off, look at it, drops off in a major, major way. The only quarterback that you haven't mentioned that I have like an potential early day three grade on, and as I'm building like my projections out on my master rankings list, Mel, what I also acknowledge is that, like, at the beginning, there are players where I just put, like, the range is the first round. Because, like, if this guy's not in the first round, I don't know. Like, you know, Troy Fautanu, right? Like, he's going to the first round. I have no doubts about that. You know, that one is, you know, signed, sealed, delivered, as one of many examples. But as you get to the fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, like, my ranges are a lot bigger, right? So, like, you could tell me Joe Milton goes in the fourth round. You could tell me he goes in the seventh round. And neither one of those two things would surprise me. But he is probably the most intriguing day three quarterback just because – the arm strength is just so off the charts. Obviously, a very good runner as well. Only had one full season as a starter. Remember, he started at Michigan, ends up, you know, backs up Shea Patterson, goes to Tennessee, becomes the backup to his roommate, actually, Hendon Hooker, who was drafted in the third round last year by Detroit after an incredible final season at Tennessee before he tore his ACL. I don't know what to make of him, Mel, because there's a lot of obviously impressive stuff, and there's some really obvious limitations with Joe Milton as well. So the range feels really big to me, but I don't think there is a bunch of diamonds in the rough at the quarterback class this year. I just don't.
No, and I think Jordan Travis, unfortunately, injured at Florida State. Yeah, you know, Tagovailoa at Maryland. But I think when you look at where we are right now with Joe Milton III, after if you could have built on a couple of games late last year, 2 years ago, and carried into this season, he would have gone probably higher than he will. But the arm strength is undeniable. Can he do the things in the NFL? Decision-making, reading defenses, accurate throws, and all those things that you need to do once he's in the National Football League. We'll have to wait and see on that. Somebody will take a chance on Joe Milton III because of the arm strength. But in terms of Michael Pratt, he'll get pushed down too for the reasons I talked about. He's got the intangibles though. So it's always that debate, but I'm with you. There's not that many quarterbacks that you're excited about after the top, what, eight? I'd say maybe eight, nine deep. That's
about where it is. Yeah.
To get the 10 just a reminder. Stretch for me, but eight to nine that you say are draftable, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so too. And by the way, like every team values day three quarterbacks differently, right? Like a year ago, the Rams used a fourth round pick on Stetson Bennett, who physically was not nearly as imposing as some of the guys that have been drafted on day three, right? They felt like, Phil, that they were maybe getting like a solid developmental backup quarterback who they probably, I don't know this for a fact, probably didn't view as an eventual starter, but they felt like they could turn him into a really good number two, which, by the way, in today's NFL, that's valuable. Like Mike White a year ago, it's a 2-year, $14 million contract. Like we see legit backup money being thrown around. Cooper Rush, like that's a very valuable part of the Cowboys roster right now. So I don't know that Joe Milton fits into that category. He's probably the kind of guy that if you're taking him, you're thinking like, let's take the 1 in 100 chance that he becomes something special. So every team's going to view it differently on day three.
Yeah, the career backup types may be Carter Bradley. He could be that guy. Okay. Yep. Carter Bradley could be, Keaton Slovis. Those are kind of guys you could look at maybe developing into those backups that maybe get you a 3 or 4 game period where you tread water a bit. But if you want to try to swing for the fences, you take Joe Milton. I don't know if Joe Milton's going to be that career backup type guy, you know? Yep. I don't know. Maybe he's better than we think once he gets in the league and he's coached up in terms of with that arm talent. But we'll see on that field. But I'd say coming out of the combine, there's a lot of guys that validated. There's a lot of guys field that raise flags in terms of good or bad, either we got to go back and look at or we got to kind of get off of. How does the combine impact some of the ratings that you had in your top 50?
Man, I tell you what, Mel. All right. So this guy did not move on my board.
Okay.
But I got to tell you, this might be one where I'm going to have to put my hand up and just say maybe the league or the league is just lower on him or the medicals are just risky enough, because every time I go back and watch Laiatu Latu, I keep thinking to myself, this guy's tape is as good as there is on any, for any defensive player in the country this past year. I mean, he is a sack machine, of course. That's what he gets paid for, but plays with a relentless mindset. He's got this incredible arsenal of pass rush moves you just don't see for a player coming out of college, even one that's been in school for 5 years. Plays with his hair on fire, like the motor is terrific. I think he's got really efficient pass rushing technique, right? You know, he's never going to be the kind of guy that gets caught running upfield, just bends the edge consistently. I'm so impressed by him. And yet when you're in Indianapolis and you're talking to people and I'm saying, yeah, I think this guy's one of the 10 best players that I've studied this past fall, you get some, yeah, I see it too. And then you see some others that are like, got to check on the medical, not quite sure. It's like, you know, the athletic upside's quite the same there. So I've got him as player 9 on my board, Mel, and I'm standing by that because I've said many times before on this podcast, I think he's the best defensive player in this year's draft. But if he ends up going later than, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, then I will concede right now that maybe I saw that coming a little bit, even as soon as March 7th when we're having this conversation.
Yeah, around 18 is where Phillips came off the board. I think the medical part of it, I think every team's going to vary on. But as a player, I'm with you, Field. He deserves to be in the top 15, I think, guaranteed. Would drop into that 20 area? He could, certainly. I went and I talked about arm length, Field, being so critical to players. You know, Peyton Wilson had the great workout, great production. We know about the injuries, the shorter arms than you prefer. Gabriel Murphy, UCLA, great overall workout, shorter arms than you prefer. Nate Wiggins didn't have great arm length at corner.
Yeah, okay, he's light,
Fisk,
too.
Braden Fisk. Senior Bowl, combine, production at Western Michigan, Florida State, great. Again, we love the effort. We love the production. We love the way he just how disruptive he is. Shorter arms than you prefer for a defensive tackle. So Braden Fisk, Jordan Morgan, I love the player for left tackle. Shorter arms than you prefer. Cooper Beebe, Cedric Van Pran, the center, Tanner Bordellini. I just highlighted some guys there with shorter arms at Cole Bishop as well. I like arm length. Arm length. For defensive backs, you can get your hands on a ball for tackling. All those things that's important. Obviously, O-line, D-line, we know how important it is. I'm big into arm length, maybe more than some other people. I'll tell you another debate, Field. Ladd McConkey, to me, deserves to still be up there. But we're we're starting to force other receivers up there. So McConkey could drop a little bit. I kind of hung to my grade on McConkey going into all this stuff. But it's going to be interesting because we got momentum now for a lot of receivers. Like Leggett from South Carolina, right? Brian Thomas Jr., LSU. Ricky Pearsall, Florida. Okay, Troy Franklin dropping back a bit from where he may have been. Others maybe jumping up. Wide receiver is going to be fun to see how these guys come off the board. Xavier Worthy, you know, Adonai Mitchell. I'm Worthy to me, Field, I think goes top 20. I saw your top 50. It surprised me a little bit, Field, that you had Worthy, despite the 4-2-1, down the board as far as you did. Explain why you did that.
Yeah, 41 on my overall big board here for Xavier Worthy, which I know people are going to say he just ran a 4-2-1, the fastest combine 40 time ever. The speed is undeniable. I'm not going to sit here and try to argue anything other than the fact that it is absolutely terrific. It is literally world-class. 165 pounds though, Mel. And I got to be honest with you, the fear with Xavier Worthy is twofold. It's what happens when guys get their hands on him. And I understand it's hard to get your hands on a guy who is one of the fastest people on the planet. But moreover, Mel, I'm not saying that you can always trust history as a predictor of the future, but there's just not a lot of guys with that stature that have a track record of huge success in the NFL with Worthy's overall body type, 165 pounds. I mean, how many 165-pound wide receivers that aren't like super tall and lanky, that are like, you know, stouter and kind of twitched up like Worthy is, how many of those do you have recall of that end up becoming dominant NFL players that merit a first-round pick? Yeah. I don't have a lot that come to mind offhand personally.
Yeah, Devontae Smith was the splendid splinter. With Devontae's weight, this guy can fly. I mean, DeSean Jackson, when he came out, didn't weigh much. It was around 170, 168, 165 in that area. So, but I look at Devontae Smith. Devontae was, I called him the splendid splinter. Xavier Worthy, kind of that kind of guy as well. Love the fact that he played through the injury, dropped some balls, but the toughness was there. So we know he has the toughness in the metal. We know he's a football player, not just a track guy that was playing football, okay, that has the track speed playing football. To me, Xavier Worthy did some things at Texas throughout his career that were you know, undeniable. They jumped out at you. It's a game where if you hit your hands on the ball, what do you do in space? What can you do down the field? How tough are you at 165? 4-2-1 is remarkable. John Ross went in the top 10 and was a disappointment, obviously, with the Bengals. But I think when you look at Xavier Worthy, we saw before the 4-2-1, I had him in that 25 to 30 range. That's where he was all along. So I didn't have to move him up much. When I saw 4-2-1, I said, wow, I thought he went 4-3-5, didn't you? 4-3-3.
I didn't think 4-2-1. I'll tell you that much, right?
He was running a 4-2-8 after the 4-2-1 was run when he was still running.
Yeah, yeah. He just kept going, right? Yeah.
Xavier the GPS Worthy, stayed on. Yeah. And I don't ever want to react. It's not a track meet. Okay. You know, the NFL is not about that. Darius Hayward Bay out of Maryland went top 10 to the Raiders, was a bust straight. We can go back into speed guys. Okay. You know, Xavier Worthy was a football player before we knew 4-2-1. I like them now. And you hold to your grade. That's what your grade is. I have a lot higher on my board than you do. We'll see. But the 4-2-1 was remarkable. Adonai Mitchell,
yeah,
the other receiver at Texas Field, is going to go first round, more than likely, at worst, early second.
I think he goes lock, right?
I love it. I'll tell you, Field, there's a receiver going to get lost in the shuffle here.
Okay.
Give me a receiver that you think is really, really good that when we look back, 3 years from now, 2 years from now, say he should have been a first and he was a second. Who's that guy for you?
Okay, so a guy that should have been a first ends up being a second is probably going to be Keon Coleman. Is that who you're thinking of in this case?
Keon Coleman's a great guy. I still think Keon Coleman's a first round.
Okay. So
I'll tell you why. I think, are we ever going to learn from our mistakes? Are we ever?
No, of course not now. No.
I mean, 46, the same mistakes that are made. Everybody says, okay, the gauntlet. Do you run a straight line, catch the ball, speed? Puka Nacua was a fifth round pick.
Yep.
All right. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp was a third round pick.
Yep.
Are we ever going to learn from mistakes we made from guys who are athletic, who can have great hand-eye coordination, or we forget fast, or quick enough? Can they do the things at two schools? To me, Keon Coleman deserves to be in the first. If he gets to the second, I'm going to go Malachi Quarterly.
Okay. Ooh, I like that one too.
Love the kid. I mean, he's a baller, and he runs through tackles. He's physical. He is a guy who can do anything you want him to do. You get him as extension of the run game. To me, Malachi Quarterly, Keon Coleman. I mean, these are some good lad. McConkey, if he gets lost in the shots, Ricky Pearsall. And I love Ricky. During the year, I like McConkey a little better.
Mm.
McConkey is not my guy. McConkey, totally. To me, if he gets pushed down a bit, becomes that guy. There's going to be some good third-round receivers in this draft. Bub Means to me.
Speaking of flyers, right?
Yeah. I'm really anxious to see who becomes the Khalil Shakir, Bo Melton. I'm throwing those names out for of guys that drop a little further than they should, because we're going to see guys at wide receiver get lost in the shuffle. And I'm anxious to see these shorter arm than you would prefer type of players. Where do they go? Because I'm big into that. I'm holding to that. Okay. Yep. That's my thing. Arm length to me, critical to a player's success in the NFL.
Okay. Two follow-up thoughts, because I have another receiver that I feel better about than I think consensus does. But one of the ways of looking at how you're ranking the wide receivers on both the overall big board and within your wide receiver rankings is, who is best equipped to be the number one wide receiver on a team? Mm-hmm. And the reality is that there are guys that, if they end up as number twos, I think can become really, really great players, maybe even greater than other guys who might get forced into a number one role. So like Xavier Worthy, if he's the number one for your team, Mel, I don't feel as confident as I do if he's the number two wide receiver option for your team. A guy like Xavier Leggett, meanwhile, might end up going later than Xavier Worthy, but I think Xavier Leggett, I guess this has become an Xavier conversation, has a better chance to become a wide receiver one for a legit offense in the NFL than Worthy does. So if you put Xavier Worthy I'm just playing this out here, Mel. Top of the second round, he goes to the Patriots after they take a quarterback with their first overall pick. That to me would be less daunting in terms of what his career could become than if you, and I'm not trying to take the low hanging fruit here, put him in Kansas City at pick 32 and let him operate amongst Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice and that entire Chiefs passing offense that found its rhythm down the stretch. So that's part of the thing that I factor in when I'm ranking my receivers as well. So how capable are you of becoming the best wide receiver on a roster?
Got a name for you. I want to see how high you have him, because I don't remember where you had him. I'm going to have him probably, I had him at 11.
Okay.
Pre-combine. And Amaka had him late first. Yep. That was what I was hearing. But I kept him still. He's still up there. I can't move him down, obviously, because he ran great. He tested. Where do you have Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver LSU now, Field?
Oh, he's 18th, Mel. He's way up the board. He and Adonai Mitchell might have made the biggest jumps off the board, up the board, for this reason. You were talking about how we don't learn from things, right? And I'm not saying that these guys aren't awesome football players, because they are very capable football players. But one of the things that we know in the NFL, big, fast, strong receivers go high. I mean, Brian Thomas Jr., I thought, Mel, was the best second-level receiver in the draft. Like, his ability to begin his route, get a corner to fall back on his heels, and then accelerate down the field was the best of any wide receiver in the entire NFL. Meanwhile, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, he wasn't as much of a deep threat as that. That was Xavier Worthy's role in that Texas offense. But talk about big, silky, smooth, kind of buttery routes. Mm-hmm. And how about the catches this past year from Adonai Mitchell? He had one drop. Our True Media team let me know that Adonai Mitchell had a 1.1% drop rate this past season, which was the best of any of the top 10 pass catchers, including Brock Bowers, and my overall rankings, Mel. So the hands are reliable. I think both those two guys, Mel, end up going in the top 20 or so picks. I get 4.34, 4.35. Are you kidding me? It's 6'2" and almost 200 pounds for each of them. Like, these wide receivers, Mel, like, I don't know how we are getting bigger, faster, stronger at a faster rate at wide receiver than seemingly every other position in the NFL. But both of those guys, to me, feel like absolute stone cold, don't think twice about it, top 20 locks.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Field, on that. I want to get to a running back. Okay. I made a comment, Field. I want to get your opinion. Yep. I made a comment that maybe we don't see a running back go till the third round.
Yeah.
Maybe late second. Yep. I'll give you a running back that I like. I've liked him all along. He's going to probably be my second highest rated running back this week. I think Brooks was certainly from Texas. Eddie not getting hurt. We're waiting to see when he comes back.
ACL tear in October. So exactly. People should be mindful of that.
Yep. So I'm going to go Jalen Wright, Tennessee.
Ooh, that's an interesting
kind of my
one.
Guy. I'm just going to say he's my guy. Jalen Wright, Tennessee, I really like. I think he's going to be third, fourth round guy, maybe, if he gets past. He's a guy I'm targeting as a guy I think is going to be real. Give me a running back in that third to fourth round area you like. Jalen Wright's my guy from Tennessee. Who's yours, Field?
It's Trey Benson from Florida State, who surprised me, Mel. And I have him on the top 50. He ended up at Pitt player 47. And here was the reason why. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that on tape, I thought he was a 4.39 guy. But he ran 4.39 at the combine. Do I think he was like a 4.55 guy? No, but I thought somewhere like mid 4.4s where Trey Benson would end up timing. So the fact that he got to 4.39 impressed me. And it reminded me of something that I've said on this show before, which is that he has the only opening kickoff return touchdown in Doak Campbell Stadium history. They've been playing football at Florida State for like 100 years, right? I don't think they've changed stadiums much, but his ability to make defenders miss in the hole. This is, in some ways, it's going to sound reductive, but when I'm evaluating running backs, there are two things that I look at. The yards that the player gets based off of blocking and the yards that the player gets based off of his own ability. And I think the second category is oftentimes more important than the first ability when we're evaluating these backs. And I think Trey Benson just finds yards that aren't necessarily there based off blocking alone. He's a factor in the passing game too, up over 11 yards per catch for his career, good in the screen game, but can do more than just the screen game as well. So I thought that Trey Benson maybe worked his way into the late second round, Mel. You've got a bunch of teams, as we know, big, robust free agent market coming around the corner here with running backs, but our teams like at the top of the heap, Dallas, Buffalo, Kansas City, and these teams, some of these teams have running backs, of course. Are they inclined to spend at running back, Baltimore Ravens, or are they going to say, we can just draft the guy because we have so many other players at premium positions that let's just save some money through the draft on the running back spot?
Yeah, I think free agency, you can get guys running backs kind of cheap. I think that's going to be interesting. Do you go for the guy who's been proven, or do you draft the running back that's, I think, are plug and play? Give them the ball and let them go. As long as they can block, they're playing. Perfect. So, yep. Or do you go for the veteran? That's the debate people are going to have. We were talking before the show about Olu Fashanu.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get it right. I'm going to go. Now we're convinced it is Fashanu.
Fashanu.
Okay,
yes.
We heard everything. Yes. We're Fashanu. Olu, yep. I watched him in high school. Good player, great talent. The hand size of an offensive tackle. We never thought we'd ever be talking about hand size for an offensive tackle field.
I'm going to try to pull this up.
Olu Fashanu. To me, being able to grab, get your hand, the bigger the hand, the better, right? Well, the hand size effect, field, explain, how does it affect how you grade them? What do we do with them? I have them around that middle port, like around that 14, 15, 16, 17 area in terms of grade. Olufashinu, we thought would be top 10. The hand size is a concern.
Mel, I was trying to find, I mentioned this to you pre-show. I thought I saw a note that Olu had an 8.5-inch hands, mm-hmm. tied for the smallest hands in like a long time for an offensive tackle. Maybe even like since we started tracking hand size at the combine. The last player that I thought was of note that had 8.5-inch hands at offensive line was Isaiah Wynn. It was a first-round pick in 2018, I think, Georgia, for the Patriots.
Yeah. New England,
yeah. Out of Georgia, who played this past season with the Dolphins. I don't have a great feel for how the offensive tackles, not named Joe Alt and probably J.C. Latham, are going to end up going, because I do think there is a healthy debate about taking a left tackle like Olufashinu versus a right tackle like Talisi Fuaga versus a guy like, I mean, there are others that obviously could play on both sides, but like, you know, Marius Mims, who's a project, and Tyler Guyton, who's the upside project as well. But specific to Olu, Mel, I would have thought coming into the process, he would be a top 10 pick. It feels like he's settling in closer to the middle of the first round, just when you get feedback from teams. But you and I both agreed on this after we talked about the hand size. While not knowing exactly what to do with it, sometimes you don't have to overthink these things. Even if there are some areas of limitation for Olufashinu, there's a lot of good tape out there. He's 6'6", 312 pounds, can move his body. I thought he was better in the running game this past year than the passing game. But in 2022, pretty darn good pass protection tape as well for Olu. So maybe not as high as we once thought, Mel, but still not a player that we should be writing off or anywhere close to it. Can I throw a name against you? Yep. Because there's one that we discussed pre-show that I want to make sure we talk about. There are a few others too, but Mason Smith, defensive tackle from LSU. And anybody who watches ESPN knows that there are a lot of great LSU defensive tackles, because we employ like half of them now, right? Booger McFarland, Marcus Spears, both first-round picks, both terrific players at LSU. And Mason Smith looked like, in 2021, he was on the path to becoming the next great LSU defensive tackle. He had 4 sacks in 9 games. 3 of them came against McNeese State. But still, this guy was exploding onto the scene in Baton Rouge. 7 plays into his sophomore season, tears his ACL, the opening defensive drive in week 1, misses all of the rest of that season. Comes back this year, and Mel, I got to be honest, when you're 320-some pounds, it's hard to be back into playing shape exactly as you were before. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy for any guy coming off of an ACL tear, but you just have that much body mass, it's just harder for you to get back in shape. It took him some time this year, Mel. But I thought by the end of the season, Mason Smith was starting to look a little bit like the player we saw back in 2021. And the context is key here. Some of the great defensive tackles in this class, obviously Byron Murphy at the top, Johnny Newton, Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, amongst others. Smaller defensive tackles, right? Mason Smith is the traits guy. He's 6'6", 300, I think it's 12 pounds was what he was at the combine, Mel. And maybe it's not all put together right now, but he's the guy that when you start to look long and hard at him and the traits and the length and the ability to disrupt, you say to yourself, this kid's got a chance to become a special football player at the next level.
Got to take a leap of faith on the talent. The leap of faith has to be there, Field. The leap of faith on a lot of these guys this year that didn't play enough. I'll give you a Marius Mims out of Georgia. Didn't play enough football. Had he had the whole year like Broderick Jones, we'll be talking about maybe top 10, top 15. Amarius Mims did not play enough, and he had the injury. Bottom line is, like, to see more of Amarius Mims on talent, you take the leap of faith. When Mason Smith, same thing. You're mentioning late in the year. I watched him when he came back. He wasn't the same Mason Smith. Couldn't get off a block, wasn't disruptive, wasn't doing a lot to really impress you. Then he came on. What do you do with that? Do you take him in the second round? Maybe he goes that high. I think Mims goes somewhere in that 20 to 32 range. But in terms of difficult players to evaluate, and we can come up with a top 10 list on that field at some point and do a whole show on that. The most difficult player, he would be one of the most difficult players to say, I am adamant about how I feel about Mason Smith. I'm saying Marius Mims as well. So to me, the BYU offense, I'll give you a chance. Kingsley from BYU.
Suamata Ia. Yeah.
I there were some games I said, wow, he needs some work. There are other games say the talent's unbelievable. An offensive line coach is going to say, give me that guy.
Correct. Yeah.
Sua Mataia. I want him. Okay. So to me, he's going to be an intriguing guy. You get into that late first, early to mid second round area to see where he comes off the board. And you mentioned Mason Smith off an injury, how he said we were debating. And you brought up a great point, Field, and I want you to go ahead and talk about it. There's an offensive tackle I liked. It could be a guard that came back from an injury. I thought played really well at Arizona, Jordan Morgan. I think he has a chance to be a late first-round pick still, even though he may not be a left tackle, but I think he has a chance to be a left tackle. At worst, a right tackle or a guard. Really like that kid, and I think he's going to be even better once he's in the NFL, now 2 years removed from the injury.
Totally agree. But I thought last year, and you feel the same way, like it wasn't that bad coming off of an ACL tear. Like that was late in his second to last season. So the 2022 season, it wasn't like it was, you know, September or something like that. Like he worked his way back, which is just impressive to do, Mel. And I would say this, no player is a guarantee in the NFL, but there are some guys where I kind of feel like what you see is what you get, right? And with Jordan Morgan, like, I think I kind of know what I'm getting from him. You mentioned like good athlete, the arm length, not superior, but the athleticism, good enough, steady, reliable, played a ton of snaps for Arizona, very good in space. You know, that Arizona offense, which was very, very fun to watch. Good news for Washington Husky fans going forward there with Jed Fish. Commanded that he gets out in space a lot. And, you know, these big guys that get out in space now, some of them get out in space and they get a little lost, right? They just don't know what to do with themselves. Jordan Morgan made sure that he got his opportunities and made them count. He's a very controlled player in space, which I think, again, bodes well at the next level. I'm with you. He ended up at 34 on the most recent top 50 rankings. Mason Smith also in that top 50. He was number 50, but I feel pretty strongly about him as a second round pick by the time we get around to it. But Jordan Morgan, I'm in there as well, Mel. I want to give you two names that maybe we're surprising. And honestly, if you feel like these guys don't belong in the top 50, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, like, the further we are away from number one, Mel, the easier it is to debate players. Like, I could see a guy at 44 and you might say 74, right? If I have a guy at two and you have him at 27, it's going to be hard for us to eventually align on that one. We just see the player fundamentally different, and probably, truth be told, one of us is right and one of us is wrong, right? But two players made that my top 50 that I think could generate some healthy debate. Max Melton, defensive back, Rutgers, ran a 4.39 at the combine, 5'11 and 7/8 of an inch. I'll call him 6 feet, 187 pounds at the combine. And I talk about this often with corners. They need short memories. I mentioned him a couple of days ago on the show, but short memory, kind of player that, you know, if he gets beat, he's back the next snap and he's saying, give me more. I'm going to come back like a batter in baseball who strikes out, goes to the plate, and has the mindset that I'm hitting this one out of the park here. So, first, he in coverage, Mel. I thought he was really good against both Roman Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. this past season. Max Melton was 46th on my big board. Thoughts on Max?
Like him, Field. I don't think you're too high on him. Rutgers has a way. They have that ability. When they develop players and they come through the program and they're coached up, they do a good job. And I think Max Melton has the length. I thought he showed the anticipation with routes and the way he played, and in certain games this year got your attention. He tested really well. I like the length of Max Melton. I'm with you. I think, and as a second, one of my top 10 corners, I think he's a solid second rounder right now. I'll tell you what do you do? And I went back and watched this kid after the combine, the Taylor Demerson kid at Texas Tech, the safety.
Yeah.
He pops on tape. I'll tell you what, he doesn't have the longest arms either. He has shorter arms than I prefer, but he ran well. He tested well athletically. I mean, he's impressive. When you watch Texas Tech, Taylor Demerson is an impressive player. So I moved him up a bit from where he was. Okay. I think Melton belongs in round two. Who's your other guy, Field, you were talking about in the top 50?
Jalen Polk, wide receiver from Washington, Mel. And here's the trick. There is great wide receiver depth, as we've talked about more than any other topic in this entire draft. So the reality is that he might be the 15th best receiver in some people's eyes, Mel. For me, I had him, and let me pull this up here. I had him as wide receiver 10, which sounds bad. Okay. The 10th best receiver in the draft, and you love him? I love him, Mel. I love him. I love the player. And I think that I acknowledge what his limitations are. He ran a 4.53 at the combine. That was actually a good number for me. I was like worried he might run like a 4.62, and you're saying to yourself, oh God, that second gear really isn't there for Jalen Polk. But you want a kid that knows how to run a route, you got that. You want a kid that makes contested catches, he does that. Go back and watch the second Oregon game. Go back and watch the Michigan State game. If you're looking for just like one or two games that kind of explains what I am talking about here. And here's the comparison I made for Jalen Polk. It's a cross-sport reference, is that he reminds me of an old school post player in the NBA. Nothing flashy about it, but he just gets buckets, right? It may not, he might shoot layups and dunks only, but it's like no flash, no sizzle. But every time you turn on the tape, Mel, he's making a big play. He had some verticality to him. He had the huge play against Texas in the college football semifinal and Washington's opening drive. So it's not like he is simply a possession receiver, but I'm higher on him than most, and I'm willing to accept that even if I have him at 45 right now on my big board, Mel, if he goes 70th, I won't be surprised. I will just applaud the team that takes him wherever he ends up going.
Tell you what, these Washington kids are going to go. I mean, this Washington football team was just, they didn't get to where they got because they just were fortunate and lucky. They made plays. They were good on really athletes on both sides of the ball. You think about, and Polk, I'm not quite as high on. I think there's other receivers I have ahead of him that will push him down the board just a bit. But I'm with you. Jalen McMillan, the other receiver at Washington, is going to go probably at a bargain point in this draft. Devin Culp, tight end, tested really well.
Yeah.
You got to think about him because really after 8 or 9, you're struggling. I would get him in there. Jack Westover, who's a guy that people forgot about, was a key ingredient as an H-back guy.
H-back, he's awesome. Yeah,
people forget about him.
We nice talk about day 3 pick.
Another guy is red hot. You talk about a red hot Husky.
I know where it
Roger
is.
Roger Rosengarten.
So good, yeah.
Everybody I talk to field in the league says he's going no worse than the second round. Wouldn't be a shock. They said, hey, if he goes back to Washington, would have gone back to Washington, he'd have been talked about as a top 20 guy in the 2025 draft. So Roger Rosengarten, right tackle at Washington. There's certainly Dominique Hampton, the safety. Yep. I'll go with who's the inside linebacker field? The off ball linebacker? Gosh.
Okay. His first name is Eddie. That's the easy part. Right. I can't find my pronunciation guide that fast, but I believe it's Olafosio, and I apologize, Eddie, if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. What a great story he is, right, Mel?
Good football player. Yeah.
Good football player. I believe Eddie, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, I do have this. Eddie will be the first player drafted from the state of Alaska in quite some time. He's got an amazing story. I mean, I think he ends up at Bishop Gorman for high school, which is where Roma Dunze went as well. He ended up in the Vegas area, goes to Washington, walk-on football player, becomes one of the heart and soul players for the team that went to the national championship game this past year, ran a 4.56 at the combine. Now, he absolutely blew up Indianapolis as well. The kind of player that this linebacker class is not great. You and I were talking about that pre-show as well. You're going to have to find some guys that you can kind of get on board with some point earlier on day 3, and Eddie might have made himself, you know, a round or two worth of money with that performance in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and then a Husky that moves down just a bit, maybe Braylon Trice moves
down. Oh, man, it kills me.
From where he was ranked, Field. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was a top 50 player, and I love the tape is really good. I mean, he was disruptive in the playoff games. And Mel, the combine workout was concerning, especially because he was down in weight too, right? You would have thought this guy's lighter, like, he's going to be more athletic than he was during the college football season. But, you know, at some point, Mel, again, the tape matters more than anything else. But as we talked about earlier on with those wide receivers, at some point you have to acknowledge the NFL is going to defer to guys that test better, right? So, like, if you thought that the tape for Braylon Trice and Marshawn Nealand was comparable during their college careers, well, then they go to the combine, and Marshawn Nealand was terrific in the three-cone drill and big, long, powerful guy with heavy hands. That's the difference between one guy going maybe in the second round and one guy maybe going late second round or early third round.
Yeah, and no question about it. And I'll tell you, a guy at Colorado State, I liked him during the year, Mohamed Kamara. Yeah. He has the ability to get a quarterback. And in this league field, that's a huge, huge impact on everything that's going on. Everybody wants him. You want a rotation. You want a guy that can come off the edge. Mohamed Kamara in Colorado State can do that. And he sure can. Well. So he's the kind of guy – I don't know where he's going to go right now. I'm hearing in that third, fourth round discussion, at least. Brennan Jackson, Washington State, one of the guys we've discussed a lot.
Love over him.
The course of in that same general area. You mentioned Nealand at Western Michigan. So, again, we'll get into some of the guys that could go in that third to fifth round area. Certainly, he's one of those. I'm also looking at corners field.
Okay.
And I look at a guy who I've struggled with. You got to help me. People can say corner. I see the length. I see some impactability, big playability. I struggle with him was Kalen Bullock at USC. I think he might get a little overdrafted based on my ratings. I like Kamari Lassiter, which he had more length, but I like the spunkiness of the Georgia corner. Kool-Aid McKintry didn't work out. I think Kool-Aid's more of a 2 than a 1, but we have some debate on that. I think when you look at where we are right now with corners field, where do you see right now a corner like Lassiter going McKinstry going, those kinds of guys, and that second tier off the top guys, because we know who the elite guys are. Is Lassiter in that second tier? Is he in the first tier? Where do you stand with him right now?
I think he's nipping on the heels of the first tier. Might be firmly entrenched right there, Mel. I tell you what, that workout, and again, it's just a workout, but no one threw a Kamari Lassiter this past season. So the workout does matter because the tape is not as, there's just not as many reps to go off of, right? You can make of this stuff what you will. Some people find it valid. Some people find it less valid. But his completion percentage when the primary coverage player last year was like top six in all of FBS. Teams did not throw it often towards Kamari Lassiter, but he is freaking confident, Mel. And he's got juice. He's got real juice. Like the way that he was moving during that workout was like different speed. I mean, I've people that were telling me like, this thing looked different amongst those corners. Now, we did not have all the guys going, right? Obviously, Quinyon Mitchell was there, but like, you know, and Terry Arnold was there, but we had Cooper DeJean not, you know, unable to participate right now. And Ennis Rakestraw, who I love, you know how much I love him. And you had told me previously, like maybe a second round pick. He runs a 4.51 or whatever it was, right? So like, and I didn't expect him to blaze the 40 time, but I think Kamari Lassiter might've done enough to maybe leapfrog in my eyes, Ennis Rakestraw. And it's close. I mean, it's not like I feel like these guys are totally different stratospheres of players, but the combine really helped Kamari Lassiter and might be enough to lock him in. Like Baltimore Ravens, absent taking, you know, finding some corners in free agency, feel like just a tailor-made fit for Kamari Lassiter at pick 30 in this year's draft.
Agree wholeheartedly, Field. And I think Mikey Sainra still, talking about him, I like him. Drew Phillips at Kentucky. Yeah, played pretty well, tested well, 4.48, 42 vertical, 11.303 broad. I think when you look at where we are right now with corners, Richardson, okay, at Mississippi State, tested really well. Yeah. I didn't see it translate the tape. I went back to the tape. I didn't see it, Field. So fine. Even though he tested great day three.
Time of experience, solid. Yeah.
Right. Just didn't see it. But I think when you look at Sainra still and Phillips from Kentucky, like the players, again, it's got to be, you like the player, do you like the workout? I always wanted to work hand in hand. Those were two kids. It worked hand in hand for me. And I Lassiter certainly did. I like to see a little more length with some of the guys. But overall, to me, I think they're still, Sainra still, where do you project them, Theo? What round do you have Sainra still going now?
The Chargers round three? No, I'm kidding. But maybe. I think so, Mel. I actually was talking about this with some people recently. I think we have this chunk of corners that are nickels at the NFL level that you kind of have to just live with what they are, right? Like you don't have any illusions about them being perimeter corners. You think that they are nickel slash do it all guys, which by the way, nickel corner in the NFL now is that's a starting position, right? That's a top 22 player on your roster. Mikey Sainra still, Andrew Phillips that you mentioned, maybe Chris Abrams Drain from Missouri, former wide receiver, Tyke Smith from Georgia, guys got some positional versatility as well. I could see all those guys kind of gravitating towards like the third, fourth round range because I believe, and I could be wrong, this could be how others don't view it, but I think the perimeter corner drop-off, Mel, might be after like the sixth or seventh guy, right? Like whether you view TJ Tampa or Max Melton from Rutgers and Iowa State and Rutgers respectively as cornerback six or cornerback seven, however you want to break it down, you get into the guys like Cam Hart, big Notre Dame physical corner. After that, Mel, like it's hard to find a bunch of obvious perimeter corner options. A lot of that next tier is sort of slot guys. And my feeling on the slot guys, Mel, is that like, well, you don't want them playing on the perimeter all that often. As long as you know what you're signing up for, those are totally worthwhile third to fourth round picks.
You mentioned the name of my guy and he didn't run. You pointed out last week he wasn't going to run. And TJ Tampa.
Yeah.
Like the length, love the way he played. There's a lot to like about this kid. I think, to me, he's no worse than a second-round pick. Wouldn't shock me if he snuck into the late first. I think
he's a top 50 at worst.
Yep. Nobody's talking enough about that kid. He was a really good football player at Iowa State. And I think he's going to go a lot higher than maybe some people, you know, the whole media thing and everything that's out there in terms of the internet. Everybody's got – TJ Tampa's a guy I think people are – he's getting lost in the shuffle. He's not getting enough notoriety, not enough publicity for the outstanding cornerback he was at Iowa State.
Super long, right? I mean, like the length is just – that's different than the rest of these corners, especially with – while there are some excellent corners at the top, right? Like no one's going to confuse some of the guys at the top. You know, I mean, talking about Nate Wiggins earlier, 173 pounds, shorter arms. Like there are some smaller statured corners that will go high. All right. I think I have one last player that I wanted to mention. Oh, I do have one more. Two guys. This will be my last thoughts, and whenever you want to wrap up with, you can do.
Sure.
Guys that I am enamored by. Xavier Leggett, we talked about him earlier, Mel. Mm-hmm. Absolutely terrific. Though I've concluded the fact that he was a one-year prominent player doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me a bit. Love the player. Explosive. The body type is absurd. 6'1", 221 pounds. Ran a 4.39 40. Not all 40 times are created equally. To do that at 220 plus pounds, Mel, incredibly impressive. Verticality really ruled. I mean, he's got the ability to leap. Like, he looks like a basketball player on the football field sometimes. Excellent after the catch. And then I know you and I have talked about him before, and I know that the opinions vary, and I think they do within the NFL. But that Chop Robinson 4.48 40, Mel, that one looped me back in. That one looped me right back in, because you know, you can talk about the production, 11 and a half sacks in his college career, the fact that he had just 4 sacks this past season, 2 of them came against UMass, not to be disrespectful to UMass, but different level of competition. And yet that first step quickness, Mel, is the best of any pass rusher in the class. And I think he has a chance to end up being a like locked in top 25 pick. And that might be too conservative.
Yeah, he's a 25. I kept him there field. I couldn't move him up down. He had a great workout. I wish he had a little more length, but the bottom line is he plays hard. And, you know, the talent is, you know, again, you got a guy, a defensive line coach going to say, hey, I can get this guy getting after the quarterback on a regular basis. Got to get him double-digit sacks. I don't know, but the talent level suggests he can be a sack guy in the NFL. Some players that are dropping back, lost a little momentum, need to regain it at pro day.
So okay, good. Let's
Austin
do this.
Booker. Austin Booker, pass rusher at Kansas.
Yeah, didn't run that fast.
Kalen King did not. But I saw on tape it could translate to the NFL as a pass rusher. I got to go back and figure out Austin Booker. Yep. Kalen King had a rough year at Penn State. 4.61. He dropped Cam Kitchens at safety at Miami.
4.65, right?
We all know that last play against Georgia Tech, and then didn't test as well as you hope. I think there's a lot of running backs. One day, Laube at New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Jaden Sheridan at Monmouth ran well. Yeah. I like the player. I thought he'd be a 7th round pick. Maybe somebody drafts him now. Thought maybe a priority free agent. I thought that the Vidal kid at Troy.
Juan Vidal, yeah. Him.
I mean, he could be a good day 3 pick as a running back. I still like off ball linebacker Bookie Watson's production at Mississippi State. I mean, that jumped out at me what he did
and
there.
He's the only player in the history of the SEC to lead the conference in tackles and sacks in the same year. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think about him on day 3. So to me, Phil, those were some guys. And another guy, Mekhi Wingo at LSU, the other defensive line.
Yes, I thought I talked about him before the show and I forgot to.
Yeah, so Wingo's another one that's going to be in there. And my other guy, we thought he would test great. We know coaching, we say coach before your name, Rook Orororo.
That's right.
Okay. From Clemson,
yeah.
A guy, the talent we said is going to be there. We thought he would test well. We didn't see the consistent productivity, but we saw flashes of brilliance at Clemson. A defensive line coach is going to say, I want that guy. Bring me him in the 3rd round area, maybe field, maybe late 2nd. Rook Orororo is a guy, certainly from a talent standpoint, jumps off the table.
Yeah, he's got all the physical stuff, right? Mekhi Wingo is kind of the opposite in the sense that, like, his body type is not going to blow you away. It's kind of like that fire hydrant defensive tackle. But
tough kid.
No, how many defensive tackles with his body type are lining up at edge as much as Mekhi Wingo did this past season for LSU? He has some juice. I'll tell you that much. I would bang the gavel.
He is a Chris Fowler favorite, is Mekhi Wingo. He even mentioned my name during the broadcast. I come, Mel's got him a little lower, and I think you got to move him up. I think I have like the 7th, 8th defensive tackle. Fowler's got him way up there. I hear you, Chris. I hear you.
Okay. I
hear
you. Like Bubby. I have a thing for LSU guys this year, Mel, because obviously, you know, felt like from the beginning we've been talking about Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels and, of course, Brian Thomas Jr. and these two defensive linemen. Shout out Andre Sam, their safety, who is, I think, the only one that I found this year, Mel, the only 7th-year college player that I found so far. I'm sure there are others in this draft, but Andre Sam, safety from LSU, 7 years at the collegiate level. All right, that was a ton of ground covered there, Mel, and I absolutely loved it. These are some of my favorite chats when we just kind of go all over the place. Hopefully our producer Dave does not hate it. We can build generic graphics that just say we're talking about the 2024 NFL draft. But Monday's show, Mel, I'll be – wheels up to Eugene, Oregon. So Daniel Dopp will be sitting in for me, which might be, I might get Wally Pipp mail. Well, Wally Pipp mail. We'll find out a Monday afternoon. So hopefully I'm back here next Thursday. But in the meantime, everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the beginning of free agency. We'll talk to you all soon.
Safe travels, Phil, too, man.